Big show midweek Wednesday, February 5th. We talked in the 3 o'clock hour to our buddy Jim Cameron. He returned, of course, as Connecticut's premier commuter columnist, talking all things tolls, rails, and buses. And in the 5 o'clock hour, a return visit from Joe Scully, who heads the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut. That's the group that looks out for businesses that use trucks in their daily routine. Joe was on site last week for a special public hearing regarding a toll bill that would affect trucks. And let's talk a little about last night, shall we? I'm sorry. Listen, you may not like what I'm about to say, and you may think you're going to turn the radio off. Whatever. Listen, I can't make you listen. I can't make you not listen. Here's the bottom line. Nancy Pelosi made an ass out of herself last night. Okay, I'm sorry if you don't like those terms. She was an idiot last night for what she did. Number one, she got to get more poly grip, too. I don't know what she was doing. Every time you see her now, she's adjusting that plate. Come on, man. Good Lord. But you know what? Listen, I know you don't like the guy. Maybe you were mad he didn't shake your hand. And all these people saying, well, you know, Trump didn't shake your hand. Well, you know what? Hey, if somebody who had pretty much called me Satan for the last 3+ years said, hey, great to see you. Here, let's do a friendly handshake because it looks good. What would you want to do? And then she rips up that copy of the State of the Union he handed her, which, by the way, you've probably seen this floating around, you know, over the day now with the social media and everything. That technically was a federal document she tore up, but listen, nobody's gonna prosecute her on it. But my God, how dumb can she look last night? Honestly, I guess that's what happens when you're almost 80 years old. Hopefully it doesn't happen to me. But what did you think of that? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And here's the thing I said to friends of mine last night. We were chatting on Facebook, watching it. And I said, you know, all this idiocy by Democrats last night, and I'm not saying this as an homage to Donald Trump, okay? Understand that. Like I said, if Trump is gone tomorrow, my life continues. I still have to come here to work willingly because I love what I do. I still have to drive. I don't have a car service waiting for me. I don't care. If he's gone, he's gone. The next guy, next gal. It's that New England Patriots thing. Next person up. But I am constantly amazed. Really, I am. It reached a new height last night. I'm constantly amazed at how dumb the Democrats are playing right into the hands of the Republicans on this stuff. Now, does that mean Donald Trump's going to get elected? No, it doesn't mean he's going to get reelected. Even today, somebody was asking me in the kitchen here at the station, what do you think? I said 50-50 at best. At this point, 50-50. I know his numbers are up, but at this point, 50-50. But it's amazing how Democrats take his bait hook, line, and sinker. And they don't step back and say, wait a minute, if we keep portraying this guy as some sort of crass, crude, irascible rube that we want to be better than, okay, then be better than the guy. You see what I'm saying? It's not tough. What happened to when they go low, we go high? Wasn't that a mantra of the Obama years? But you have this display by Nancy Pelosi last night, tearing up the copy of the State of the Union address. And I know some people say, oh, come on, Paul, for God's sake, it's only a copy. But that's not the point. The point is, at a moment where you're trying to figure out, where do we turn the ship here? What heading do we go on here? Hey, well, you know, we're trying to turn the ship here. What do we do here? Impeachment's obviously failed, at least for the time being. Russia kind of petered out. This whole emoluments thing is on life support, too. What do we do here? So she, as the number three person in the government, the second person in line to the presidency, puts on that display last night? Are you kidding me? Come on. You're going to be Trump that way? And the fellow Democrats who sit there, and again, they don't pick their spots. pick your spots. You don't want to clap for ending third trimester abortions. Okay, that's fine. That's to be expected. You don't want to clap for, you know, some of the immigration stuff. Okay, that's to be expected. But you don't clap because, or you don't give an ovation because we're kind of energy independent now. How do you not do that? Honestly, how do you sit there and sit on your hands when we really don't need to rely on foreign oil anymore? Yeah, we buy some to keep the market steady, to keep the Saudis steady. How do you not react to that? How do you not react when he says, listen, you terrorists, stop it or we're going to come after you? And they sit there on their hands. And the ultimate from last night, again, by what I'm reading here, I didn't see it specifically, by what I'm reading here, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, those two, Abbott and Costello there, those two couldn't even honor this gentleman who's the oldest survivor now, the Tuskegee Airman? Really? What is wrong with you? You know, when stuff like this happens, it means you're so blindly, neurotically angry at somebody that you lose judgment. It's amazing. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Let's go to Angel in Bridgeport. Angel, hi, you're on WICC. What's up?
Hey, Uncle Paulie, how's it going, my friend?
What's going, buddy? What do you got for me?
Okay, here's the thing. You see, I'm going to kind of break this down alongside with you.
Yeah.
First of all, you have nothing to apologize over. You're hitting the nail on the head like you always do, which is classic, my friend, okay?
Thank you.
You're right. You're absolutely correct, and I'm with you on this because, I mean, you could say that she is an ass, and she is, because she is. What's her face over there? Why you think Donald Trump did not want to shake this person's hand? Why? Because, I mean, from the very beginning, from the very start, even before he was president, what were all those kooky Democrats trying to do?
Impeach him.
They were basically, they were all making up all this crap way before he even became president. Once he became the president, they said, well, they're going to go all in and try to get him out.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see anybody, you know, taking any past presidents out or making stories up like that. But they do it with him because, like the saying goes, he's not a politician. He's a businessman. But he's become the very best president that we can ever hope for.
And, you know, Angel, like I said, listen, if they're still trying to run against the guy in November, that's fine. Everybody wants to see a good campaign. But, you know, it's like a fighter in the middle of a fight. If you see the left jab isn't working or the right hook, you know, you got to go back to your corner and you don't suddenly hit somebody with a sucker punch. You know what I mean? You try and, okay, now what's the next tactic here? But I don't know, Angel, it looks like they're kind of out of ideas here. You know what I mean?
And what about Mitt Romney? Here's another one.
Well,
he's talking all this stuff. Oh, because I'm going to vote against him. Who cares? That's no big deal. Because my boy, the Don, is going to roll steam over all these people, okay? Like the Deacon Soul Forever speaking. You understand, brother?
All right. I'm telling you. Angel, I got to run, my friend. I'm against the time-wise. Angel, thank you. Appreciate the call. Angel there in the beautiful Park City of Bridgeport. All right. Are we wrong here? Angel and I, are we wrong? Was Nancy Pelosi right in what she did last night? Honestly, if you were pumping your fists there last night saying, go, Nancy, go, let me know what you think. He writes the weekly Getting There column in the Connecticut Post, founder of the Commuter Action Group, an advocacy group for rail riders in Connecticut, and along with that, he also fights for truth, justice, and the American way. Jim Cameron.
Well, someone's got to do it, right?
Shine the bat signal, and here comes Jim in the Batmobile. Jim, how are you? Jim Cameron, folks.
I'm fine. And I have all my original teeth as well, too.
Well, good. You didn't just have to have a $4,000 molar implant like I just did. But hey, what the heck? No, but they're all normal. Other than that one, just one fake one there.
Great.
But I paid for my my implant guys. He and the wife and kids, they needed a weekend away, so I paid for that.
I think he pays for boat payments for the whole summer.
Oh yeah, they ain't cheap, my friend. Boy Jim, since we have spoken last, pretty much nothing has changed on tolls. The governor gave a kind of a cursory mention to it earlier today in the State of the State address, kind of a can't we all get along moment here. But what do you think here? Again, basic question, Jim. Do you think the votes are there or not?
Well, I don't think they're – they want to have a vote, but they're not going to call a vote until they know the votes are going to be there.
Yeah.
I think it was the House Minority Leader that made that point. You vote when you know you got the votes. So the longer they keep pushing this back, the less convinced I am that they have the votes to make it pass.
Yeah, and again, you had Marty Looney, our old buddy Marty, coming out there about a month ago saying, well, we have this covenant, or however he put it, just some flowery kumbaya, I'd like to teach the world to sing language. And we haven't heard boo about that.
No, and they made some progress over the summer. They both sides got together and they heard about federal money that might be available. And then, last Friday, there was a 10-hour-long public hearing.
Yes, what'd you think of that?
Well, I watched most of it. On fast forward, I was, zipping through some of the testimony.
Mm-hmm.
But as a couple of people pointed out, they were asking for commentary on what wasn't even a bill. So we don't know what the final bill is going to look like. And I think that's part of why the vote's been pushed off, because there's further negotiation going on to, buy votes. That's, what it's all about.
Well,
that's what the governor promised he was going to do if he needed to persuade his Democrats to vote in favor of tolls.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, one of the prominent speakers in that hearing, I did watch it. In fact, we aired some of it live right here on WICC. We dipped in and out. Pat Sasser, founder of the No Tolls Connecticut movement. One of your favorites, Jim, from what I understand.
Well, he and I have philosophical disagreements
mm-hmm.
And differences on this whole tolls approach. But I watched his testimony with rapt attention.
Oh, he was good.
I had never seen him really speak in public before. And I absolutely agree. He was not good. He was really, really great.
Yeah.
I was in awe, and I have to respect him for what he's been able to build. A true grassroots movement that collected thousands of signatures, working on a shoestring budget of, $5 here and $10 there, donated by concerned citizens. He's organized rallies. He has held, I think he gave the metrics of what he's been able to achieve in his testimony. 29 towns have voted against tolls. So I disagree with him on his point of view, but I really admire him as a believer in small d democracy for what he's been able to do. He's been an excellent just catalyst for the angst and the cynicism that is rife in the state right now.
And Jim, you and I are residents in this state first and foremost. And again, in a state that does not have initiative and referendum here, that so many other states do. So that's how they get tolls and marijuana and gambling, things that we have to go through the legislative process here. He really has come about the closest to doing that without having initiative and referendum here. I think he's changed the landscape here a bit.
Well, he has, and maybe the thing that he and I disagree with is, he's against tolls, I'm in favor of tolls, but he's really using the threat of campaigning vigorously against anybody that supports tolls. Vote for tolls, lose at the polls, and that I think has intimidated a lot of lawmakers, and for that I have been critical of that behavior. But I absolutely agree. He has really organized his followers. He was sending out daily emails to have them call 5 or 6 state senators and give them talking points on how many people in their district had signed the petition against tolls, He gave his followers their email address, their Instagram feed, their Facebook page, and basically said, if you're concerned about this issue, now's the time to speak up.
Yeah.
And they've been speaking up.
Jim Cameron is the guest, going to touch on a couple of topics, electric buses in Bridgeport, and something to do with train horn noise. I read Jim's column about that the other day. Stand by, back more with Jim Cameron straight ahead. Traffic and weather together on the sixes here at WICC. And the guy who writes the Getting There column, weekly basis for the Connecticut Post, Hearst Connecticut Media, Jim Cameron, Connecticut's transportation guru, is with us. Jim, you wrote a column, interesting, regarding train horn noise. A lot of folks hear those horns. I hear them in Wallingford all the time, coming up through town. I live a couple of miles from the CT rail crossing there on Route 5, and I hear the thing clear as day. But I guess, Jim, you write that there are some folks who are trying to, say, turn it down a bit. What's going on with that? Oh, Jim, hold on. Let me punch you back up. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
I'm back.
Yeah,
here we are.
Yeah. You know, with this train horn noise, what's going on with that?
So on the branch lines, the New Canaan, the Danbury, and the Waterbury branches of Metro North, there are grade crossings. There are places where the railroad track goes across highways. Not so on the main line, which is barrier-free for its entire length and between New Haven and New York. But on the branch lines, where those grade crossings are, there are, in 99% of the cases, gates that close when the train is approaching. But there are also people who are stupid enough to drive around those gates and try and beat the train at the crossing. That's why the railroad, the federal government, and the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration, require all trains approaching a grade crossing to blow their horns. And they are loud, 110 decibels. That's almost as loud as a jet taking off. They have to blow two long, one short, two long. And they have to do that at least 20 seconds before they go across the grade crossing. So the faster the train is going, the further away they have to start blowing that horn. In New Canaan, there is a two-mile stretch where there are something like six grade crossings, and that means the train is pretty much blowing its horn for the entire distance.
Jeez.
Now, you know, I live about 2 miles from the New Canaan branch, maybe a half mile from the main line, and I can hear those trains as well, too. They're not as loud to me as they are to the immediate neighbors. So the question was, what can they do to reduce the amount of noise? There was a big meeting of all the local residents, the commissioner of the DOT, Metro North, the local politicians. And the long and the short of it is, the only thing they can do is to appeal for a waiver from the federal government, from the FRA, to designate a quiet zone. And the only way they get that is to put in what are called quad gates. In other words, gates that close on both sides of the track in both directions to prevent stupid people from trying to drive around the gates. That costs, $100 million per set of gates.
How much?
About $1 million.
$1 million per each set of gates.
For a set of gates. Well, there's warning technology.
Yeah, no,
as well,
I know.
Too, and
yeah.
It's, you know, it's expensive. So, no, actually, I'm looking at my notes here. $2 million.
Wait, whoa. So $2 million per crossing. Wow.
Per crossing.
Jeez.
So the other thing that they've tried, and they've tried this on the Hartford line between New Haven and Hartford, is putting the horns not on the train, but at the gate crossing itself. So that as the train is approaching, the horn is blaring to people that are going to be driving across that crossing. But it focuses the noise closer to the crossing than on the tracks approaching the train crossing itself.
Yeah, and you know, Jim, the problem I can see with that, if I can just interject here, I had a friend of mine's relative of a friend of mine, was working on the railroad. He was working on the New Haven line. And he, for whatever reason, Jim, from what I heard, he was a little too close to one of those horns when it was blown as a train passed him. He didn't have his ear protection on, and the, as you say, 110 decibels. Now, these would obviously be softer, but who knows, that he actually incurred some vascular damage and some inner ear damage because, you know, he was virtually right under, as his relative told me, right under those horns when they went off. And like you said, it's 110 decibels, and he was merely a few feet from them. They are dangerous to be close to.
Well, and that's an unfortunate situation. He should have been wearing some sort of ear protection. But remember why these horns are there, whether they're on the trains or these wayside horns at the closing, at the crossings themselves. It's to stop people from driving on the tracks and having collisions with trains. And that seemed to have been lost at this particular public hearing in Stamford. One person actually said, well, why don't you just let Darwin use natural selection? In other words,
let people die.
Stupid people out of the take them out of the gene pool, so they don't pass along stupidity to their kids.
Were you at that hearing, or did you watch it online?
I was there. Oh no, I was there.
What was the?
I got a chuckle. I got a chuckle. And as I was leaving, I overheard a couple of other residents.
Yeah,
I quoted this in my story too. A couple of other residents saying they missed the good old days. When there would be these grade crossing accidents, because as kids they'd like to go down
and watch.
Track. Well, not watch, but look at the carnage. That
Oh, that's what I mean.
So that's a little cold. That's
you know,
that's
Jim.
Really
those were cold. The those were the good old days.
Yeah,
when you could watch the what do we used to call it, the meat wagon come by. Just,
right.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Poor Mrs. McGillicuddy. She her hearing wasn't so good, but she's gone on to a better place.
Praise Jesus. Jim, hang on. We'll be back to you, traffic and weather together, and hopefully no train accidents on the sixes right here on WICC. And our transportation guy is with us for a few more minutes. His monthly check-in, Jim Cameron, joins us. You read his column in the Hearst, Connecticut papers, Hearst Media, Connecticut Post. Jim, a couple more things here. A new kind of bus coming to the Park City. And unfortunately, Jim, it looks like our buddy, our pal, old P.T. Barnum, won't have anything else named after him to do with the rails. In the city, at least, we're going to have to live with a bridge and a festival. But the train station, I guess that's not happening.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a sec. But let's do the good news first, which is Bridgeport is going to get the state's first all electric buses. The GPT, the Greater Bridgeport Transit Area, runs 57 different buses. Most of them are diesel powered, and they get like an astounding 3 miles to the gallon.
Wow.
But these new electric buses are going to be, all electric, completely clean, and it's going to be able to be charged overnight at the garage. It took them a little time to find the right bus, given the kind of passenger loads and the terrain and the distances that these buses are going to have to run over. But the interesting thing is that the new buses that are coming, starting in the spring, are going to be bought in large part with money that was collected from the Volkswagen automobile company as part of their Dieselgate scam.
Oh.
Remember when they were caught cheating with the emission standards on their diesel vehicles?
Basically faking them, yeah.
Yeah. So they collected, hundreds of millions of dollars from VW. And $7.5 million of that is going to help buy those new buses for GBT.
Very nice. All right. That works. That works for me.
Yeah.
However, you and I joked about this several months ago. We're apparently not going to spend $300 million of state money on an East Side train station in Bridgeport. $300 million. That would have been cheese. Was there a frequent flyer lounge involved in that one? I'm not sure.
No,
you know.
As a matter of fact, there wasn't even going to be a station house.
Oh, come on.
No. So this is, let's take this, take your listeners
All right.
back in time. Set the Wayback Machine, Dr.
Okay.
Peabody.
Hold on. Let me put my Wayback jingle in the carton machine. Go ahead.
There we go.
There we go.
Just before his reelection campaign for the second term, Governor Malloy showed up in Bridgeport and promised the city and its residents that he was going to build a new train station in East Bridgeport. It was going to be called the Barnum Station. Now, this announcement actually took the Department of Transportation by surprise because they didn't know that this was coming. And it was a very blatant political ploy to try to win votes in a very tight election. Fast forward a few years, and what started off was as a modest station with just a platform on either side of the outside tracks mm-hmm. had morphed into this middle island platform, huge complex, millions and millions of dollars, parking lots nearby. And, you know, the argument that they made was this is a very blighted area.
Yeah.
You know, it's filled with rubble strewn, you know, terrain. And the idea was build this station and transit oriented development. People will come and establish businesses. It would be good for the local economy. And I could see that. But what had started as a simple platform and then morphed into this $300 million station, which did not even have an enclosed waiting room.
See that
on the platform.
That's mind-boggling. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and the people that were talking about it had delusions that the Amtrak was going to let Acela stop there on its way between New York and Washington. I mean, Acela doesn't even stop at the existing Bridgeport station. So why are they going to stop in the middle of this rubble-strewn neighborhood?
And, you know, Jim, I have
no waiting room.
I use the Bridgeport station at least one or two days a week in and out to head down to the city and back. It's the existing Bridgeport station, Jim, is not a bad station. It's not the newest station. But why don't we pump some money into that and maybe, I don't know, spruce that sucker up a little bit, all right, on Water Street? Why don't we do that?
Well, and that station is ideally located. It's right next to what has just been renovated as a huge bus pulse point. And it's next to the ferry terminal as well. And it's next to the downtown where all the businesses are.
And the arena the new concert amphitheater.
Yep.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if he was going to build a second station, I could see maybe a modest little platform with somewhat limited service. But to focus the whole transportation modality nexus into East Bridgeport just did not seem to make sense to me. Anyhow, here we now have Governor Lamont saying, it's a nice idea. Thanks, Daniel. But we're not going to be building any new stations until we get the ones that we have in a state of good repair.
And
that was a disappointment to Bridgeport, I'm
sure. Yeah, I'm sure. But again, the existing station is not a bad place. Let's spruce that up a little. One other note, Jim, I think we all have read that apparently Bradley International Airport is going to remain, I guess, right? Bradley International Airport. I know they were entertaining different names. Malloy International was not picked. I know that. John G. Rowland International. I'm guessing that wasn't picked as well, right?
No. A rose by any other name. I mean, it is what it is. I don't care what you call it.
And it's
Hartford, Springfield.
Bradley is not
airport.
Bradley is not a bad airport. If you give me the option to, it's a few dollars more. Instead of going to JFK or LaGuardia, I can leave out of Bradley. I'll do that 9 times out of 10. It's not a bad little place, you know?
And they have international service. I mean,
it
certainly serves the upstate region very well.
Yeah.
The question has always been, why not, as you were investing in commuter rail with this new Hartford line, between New Haven, Hartford, and Springfield, why not run a spur up to the airport?
Yeah.
Why not make it a one-seat ride so you can take mass transit to get to that airport? That has yet to happen and probably won't.
Jim, as always, wonderful stuff. Our commuter guru, Connecticut Post, Hearst Connecticut Media, all over the place, Jim Cameron. Jim, keep us updated on those $2 million gates in New Canaan, and we'll check back in a few weeks. Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, folks. You can read him in the Connecticut Post, Hearst Connecticut Media. Jim Cameron, our commuter guy, right here on WICC. Here today, we played some portions of the governor's state, of the state address. Any sitting governor in Connecticut of either party, of course, gives the state address, opening whatever session of the General Assembly it may be. We're in the short session. Right now, only set to go 3 months, we think. But again, one of the big elephants in the room is tolls, and a guy who has quite the vested interest in tolls because it's supposed to be trucks only, and a guy that deals with trucks, the guy who runs the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut, the main representative and lobbying firm for the state's companies with trucks, is the leader of the Motor Transport Association. Joe Scully is with us. Joe, it's Paul here again in Bridgeport. How are you?
Paul, good evening. Great to be with you.
Were you at the Capitol today, or did you have your observers there?
No, I was there today. And, yeah, you know, some more interesting news, right?
Really? Hold it. Wait, we're going to first of all, before you break the news, was there an era of warmth and congeniality when you walked in the building today? Or not?
depends on what side you're on, I guess.
Okay. All right. What do you got for
us? Some people happy to see me. Maybe others not.
Oh, him again. That guy's back here, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But
so what do you got?
You know, they were trying to do the special session this past Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
That didn't work. The latest they were saying was next week, the week of the 10th. And word today is that it's not going to happen the week of the 10th. Maybe they're looking at the week after. So, you know what? The longer this goes on, I think the better for our side, which is no tolls. So I think it's a good sign.
Yeah, Joe, I was talking to a couple of my sources up there last night, both legislatively and in the front offices there. And of the couple, three people I talked to, I just asked them out and out, are the votes there? And they all said, we don't think so. Because a couple of the folks who would know, I don't want to name names here, but they both got back to me and said, no, because if there was, I would have at least heard a little bit about it. Is that what you're hearing?
It's basically the same thing. And, you know, this kind of cute line keeps being thrown out there. If you have the votes, you vote, which is very, very true. That is a great way to boil it down. The reason we haven't voted yet is because they don't have the votes, meaning they don't have the support. And the reason that we got pushed back from this Monday, Tuesday of not doing it reportedly, this is no inside information. It's just that the House wanted the Senate to go first and the Senate wanted the House to go first because neither body thinks that the other one has the votes. And the thing is, they might both be right. There might not be enough support in either chamber. So, you know, I'm not declaring that 100%, but
yeah,
that's kind of the way that people are thinking at the Capitol right now is there's not enough support in either body.
You know, the governor had a line today, a line or two, and you know, if you saw it or watched it, Joe, he kind of did a little two-step, a little cha-cha around the toll issue here. He mentioned it kind of cutely and said, hey, let's take a hand vote, which I thought was kind of funny, and he reassured Marty Looney he wasn't going to throw him off the plank. But he did say something like, you know, to the big trucks that are causing the damage on the road, I think he said here, and I immediately thought of you, not knowing you were going to come on today. I knew you were available now, but what did it feel like when you heard him say that?
Well, it reminded me of the public hearing that I was involved in on Friday at the
yeah.
Capitol, where I talked about that, and you know, it got a little passionate on Friday. Because I pointed to a study that says from the National Academy of Sciences, which said if a highway is properly designed and constructed, it will only need routine maintenance. In other words, it's not getting beat up by and torn up by the traffic that you know is going to be on it, which is trucks. And I would point out, the weight limit for trucks in Connecticut is at least 20,000 pounds lighter than in surrounding states. In surrounding states, you can go up to 100,000 pounds. So for all this talk about our roads are getting torn up by trucks, come on, stop. So I was alluding to that study when I said, are we capable of designing and building our highways to accommodate the traffic that we know is going to be on it?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a rhetorical question. Of course we are. So it's just that kind of talking point, oh, the out-of-state trucks, they're damaging our roads.
No, it's not true. It's just part of a ploy to attack the industry to get tolls up under the guise of trucks only, even though everybody really knows it's going to be cars in a short time from now. We've already seen it. We've seen 3 or 4 plans to toll cars this year. So I don't think anybody is buying trucks only at this point.
All right. Stand by. We'll be right back to you. Joe Scully, head of the Motor Transport Association, looking out for the state's truck companies, whether they own a fleet or 1 or 2 trucks. More with Joe straight ahead. Traffic and weather together on the 6s right here on WICC. Hey, how are you? 5:38, almost 5:39, 21 before 6. Love to have you chime in here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Joe Scully is the guest. We continue with him. A few more minutes from the Motor Transport Association. Here's the line, Joe. I just want to read it to people who didn't maybe hear my replay of it earlier today. Governor saying, and I know, quote, the choices to fund these improvements are between the Democrats' plan to levy a small user fee on the heavy trucks that do the most damage to our bridges and the Republicans' proposal to divert money from the rainy day fund. You're in the room where it happens, so let's vote and get the state moving again. So I would imagine, Joe, that you must have cringed when he said small, then he said user fee, then he said heavy trucks. Then he said to do most of the damage.
Yeah, a whole bunch of mischaracterizations, misleading, right? You know, user fee means toll.
Tolls, taxes.
Implying and, you know, that, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, and small. You know, Joe, I read the numbers the other day. I didn't realize it, that these truck-only tolls, now, if it's a fleet and they're passing the call, you know, and the company's saying, oh, screw it, we're just going to put it on the retail price of what we deliver, that's one thing. But a small guy, and you represent a lot of small guys, you know, $6 to $13, that ain't small. That's not small,
no,
Joe.
Not at all. And on Friday, I had a couple members who were able to take time out of their day and come to the Capitol and wait there for hours waiting to testify. One guy has 4 trucks in his business. He's got six total employees. He's got 4 trucks. He said this is going to cost him $60,000. So that's a lot of money. But wait for this one. Another guy with a bigger fleet, 35 trucks, estimated $400,000 to $700,000 in 1 year. So for all the talk about out-of-state trucks, which by the way, do already pay taxes and fees to come through. I can talk about that later. But for all the talk about out-of-state trucks, we're shooting small businesses here in Connecticut right in the foot by doing this.
And again,
we talk about...
Yeah, I mean, Joe, hold on. Let me just get in here before we get too far away from this. Because you brought up a great point there. You said the smaller guy, 6 employees, right? 4 trucks is what you said, right?
Yes.
And it would cost him $60,000 a year. I don't know. That's probably what he's paying one of those truckers. I mean, sounds to me, Joe, like that would be one of those guys or gals that he might have to lay off.
Yeah, and there was I'll call it a sadly ironic moment when he was testifying. One of the members of the committee asked him a question. Did you ever think about expanding? He said, well, we actually have expanded a little bit. We went from 2 to 4 trucks, he goes, but if I have to pay $60,000, I'm either paying a new employee or I'm paying tolls. So which one is it? You know, he can't do both. When you're a small business, you have to make those kind of tough decisions. And I hope his testimony was impactful. I know both guys were quoted in various media outlets. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that I just ask our elected officials to pay attention to. Look, don't forget about the in-state businesses.
Did you feel, Joe Scully, at all that there was a genuine desire to get input from folks like you and like the small outfits and the bigger outfits and the guys and gals that just drive? Do you think that there was an honest concern at that public hearing, or was it just, yeah, we got to go through the motions here, let's just do this and get it over with? When you left the Capitol that night, what did you think?
It's probably a little bit of both. I mean, look, we all know that leadership has made up their minds. They're pushing forward on this full speed ahead. But I do think there are plenty of what we would call, you know, rank and file. In other words, not in leadership, who want to do the best thing for their district, their constituents, which include businesses and individuals. I think they truly listened. And even though, you know, this was just the transportation committee, so even if most of the committee has already made up their mind, I do believe that the rest of the elected officials were watching this on TV or going back to check it later. I think they truly want to hear things. So that's why I was able to bring those members, and I'm glad they were there.
Well, Joe, I'm glad you checked in with us. Keep us updated. You can call us anytime. Talk to my producer up at the front, Eric, and let us know if you hear something. We'll be glad to put you back on. All right,
All right,
Joe.
Thanks,
appreciate
Paul.
It. Joe Scully. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Joe Scully. He heads the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut. That's the lobbyist arm, body that looks out for the companies that own trucks in Connecticut. Whether they have small concerns, small companies that own maybe two or three trucks. And then, like you said, he has a big client there, big industry group member that owns 35 trucks.